Okay, so Parshas Zos Avracha 5780. The reason why I am all dressed up is because I'm freezing and it's a sukkah, and I don't feel well because when you sleep in a sukkah when it's 30 degrees outside, not properly, then this is what happens to you. So
are you
welcome. I hope you're okay with me. Yeah, you're whatever. No, you're not putter if you're an idiot. So that didn't work out well for me. Perek Lamed Dalet Pasuk Aleph. Pasuk says, "Vayal Moshe Me'avos Moav Har Nevo." Moshe Rabbeinu went up from Arvos Moav, from the plains of Moav, to Har Nevo, Rosh HaPisgah, it was the top of the cliff, Asher Pnei Yericho, right by the city of Yericho, by the face of Yericho. Vayarehu Hashem is called Aretz. Kadosh Baruch Hu showed him the entire land. It's a Gilad ad Dan, the entire land of the Gilad until Dan. There's more, and obviously the Pesukim afterward go through the rest of Eretz Yisrael, everything you saw, but this at least starts it off. Rashi says this was a mountain, not just some little hill, that it was far to the top. It was 12 milos, according to Gemara and Sota, Yud Gimel and Beis. We don't know what a mila is, but it happens to be height. You know, I guess whatever it is, 12 milos to get to the top. And Moshe Rabbeinu, with his strength, was able to get to the top with one step. Took one milo, one step, and was able to get to the top as if it was nothing at all. The Mizrahi, the Gurariya, the Maskil, the Dabin, the Sis Chamim say Rashi deduced this. He got this from the fact that it says, May Arvos Moav. We know where Moshe Rabbeinu is. He's been there for 36 days. He's been talking to Bnei Yisrael, and he made a bris with Klal Yisrael in Arvos Moav. It's obvious that he was coming from Arvos Moav. So why mention those words? It's to tell you how far it is, that this wasn't just a hop, skip, and a jump for most people, but it was for Moshe Rabbeinu. It should have been a long time. And as we said last week, Moshe Rabbeinu died Echatzos Yom, but actually died, right, by Tzidkas Chatzedek, by Mincha time. It could very well be that it was much quicker than that, that Moshe Rabbeinu walked up the mountain so quickly that even though he went up at Chatzos Yom, he passed away soon after that because it did not take him a long time to climb up this mountain. There was a miracle that happened there, yeah. Somehow Kvitzah Derech. That's one way of looking at it. We'll get to it. But yes, one way of looking at it is Kvitzah Derech. The Be'er Basada says the command was given to him before he got to Arvos Moav. It was actually given to him in Parshas Pinchas before he had gotten to that area. So the Pasuk does have to tell us where he went up, where he went and how he got there. He says these milas are not really steps. They're huge mountains that he had to step from one mountain to the other. And I'll tell you why that makes sense. It seems right now that he's in the land of Reuven, but he died in the land of Gad. Meaning, he started off in the land of Reuven and then went up to the land of Gad. This strange thing about this is that he went from one mountain to another mountain to another mountain. 12 milas are not just steps. They're not just like these cliffs that went from one to the other. The 12 milas are literally from one mountain to another, jumping from one to the other, and he's able to do all of that in one step itself. And the Amloi says, as we spoke about last week, this was Shabbos. Nonetheless, even though there are issues of Tchume Shabbos, there was a miracle. And this is what Aaron just said before, there was Kvitzah Derech, and therefore he was able to get from one to the other without any problem whatsoever. Torah Tumima says that the whole point behind this, and the reason why he mentions this in the first place, that he was able to take 12 steps and turn it into one, etc., is to tell us that Moshe Rabbeinu was so great that even before he died, he was able to do everything without any exertion or any extra effort, was able to get there without any problems whatsoever. How great he should have been before the day of his death itself. It sounds like it wasn't even a miracle the way the Gemara says it. It's almost as if Moshe Rabbeinu was fine with climbing a mountain on the last day of his life. What were you going to say, Matthew?
If it was Shabbos, how did he read all the Sfarim on the same day?
Right, we talked about that last week. We don't know. There were so many things that had to happen on that day if it was Shabbos, and they don't make any sense to us. It's a possibility that somehow this is all miraculous. It's a possibility there was something even greater going on here. I don't know. But yes, definitely there are issues with all those. It's a great question in of itself. The Gur Aryeh, however, says this was a crazy high level that Moshe Rabbeinu was on right before he died. It shows that he was on a madrega where there was no chilukim. And remember, this is the Maharal. The idea is that when he took 12 milas and turned them into one, it's sort of like, does that remind you of anything? Come on, think of a medrash that everybody knows as a little kid. 12 milas, turning them into one, is just like
the stones.
Very good, very good. The 12 rocks of Yaakovinu turning into one. Says the Maharal, that's not a coincidence that the Medrash uses 12 milas and 12 stones into one mila, one stone. The idea is that the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu was that he was able to make multiple things into one. He was able to turn things into no chiluk. He was able to make things seem like they were all big, one big thing of Achdus. And that's the concept that he was great. He was able to climb all steps at once because he was just that great. What were you going to say, Paul? No, Yaakov was before. This is, come on, who is it? Who's tonight?
Aaron.
It's Aaron. It's Arnold. It's good old Arnold. Man, if it was only motions, right? And I can't talk about this now, right? But it's okay. Time in a Crow asks three questions over here. Three questions. Number one, what's the point of telling us that Moshe Rabbeinu ran to the mountains as if he did it all in one step? Now, I get it. We just said from the Torah Tumim and the Gur Aryeh that it's to show his strength, to show his power, show how great of a person he is. But that's number one. Number two, and Aaron, this goes with your question as well. The Gemara, again, Tosis Menachos, it's on Daf Lamed Amud Aleph, points out that he died on Shabbos, that everything took place on Shabbos. You already asked the question, how did he write those Sifrei Torah on Shabbos? That's a great kasha in and of itself. But he says, isn't it forbidden to run on Shabbos? Running on Shabbos is not mutter, right? How are you allowed to run on Shabbos?
What about
reason doing a mitzvah, trying to do a mitzvah? So hold on. Number three, running normally takes away 1/500th of your eyesight. I don't know how that goes with like running and jogging or whatever it is. I have absolutely no idea. But the idea is supposed to take 1/500th away from your eyesight. How is Moshe Rabbeinu allowed to do this? So the answer, says Rav Chaim Kanievsky, is exactly what you just said. Zrizim Akdim L'mitzvos. The last mitzvah that Moshe was commanded is to die on top of that mountain. Although we would look at that and say, why is that considered a mitzvah? It was considered a mitzvah. This was a great mitzvah for Moshe Rabbeinu to do. And the last one, they didn't get a chance to do it. So even though it was Shabbos, he ran to do it because it was a mitzvah. Even though it takes away 1/500th of your eyesight, he knew that this is a mitzvah. You don't lose 1/500th of your eyesight when you're running to go ahead and do it. And even though it meant his own death, similar to what happened by the war against Midian, he still ran to do it knowing that this is the best thing for him. That's why Moshe did what he did. The Chofetz Chaim says the exact same thing in Pirkei Shoshana, page 225. He says he didn't consider this mitzvah any different from any other mitzvah that he had during his entire life. He was mekayim it with zrizus to the point where he knew, yes, I'm going to die, I don't care, and jumped 12 milas in one step to be able to get there. And that's true Musar Haskell. That if a Kaddish Baruch Hu commands us about any mitzvah, that's how we have to treat it. We have to run to do it and get there as soon as we can to be involved with this. Of course, if there was Kfitz Sederach, it's not really a kasha in the first place. If there's real Kfitz Sederach, it shouldn't have been that big of an issue. The Grizz says that those extra words, Me'arvos Moav, show that Moshe Rabbeinu did not go up on his own. The Medrash Rabbah says that he waited until he heard a message from Metat. That's the name of this malach is Metat, and the last part of his name is Ron. He's known as the Sara Olam, the angel that takes care of all this stuff in Shemayim. You might remember him from Chagiga, Daptes Vav, who meets Acher. Acher sees him at one point. He's also known in Yevamos, Tezayin Mabez, in Atosis over there. It talks about the Sara Olam, who told him that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted him to climb the mountain at that moment. And as soon as he did, he was given Kfit Sederach and found his way up there, was able to do it in one step. That's it. He was standing in Arvos Moav when that happened. But says the Grizz, he made sure he did not go anywhere until Hashem gave him a specific command to go up. And that's when he did it. It was Mekayim, that mitzvah. And Tamad Das, that's where Sternbach assumes that this whole thing is miraculous. It's not just the strength of Moshe Rabbeinu. He did it over there. So if so, he questions the point of this miracle. Why would you need a miracle at this point? Why not let Moshe Rabbeinu climb up the mountain on itself? Why did it have to be that it had to be 12 milas in one step if it was miraculous? Again, if it shows his strength, it shows his strength. But if it's miraculous, why did it have to be that way? So soon, we're going to see that Chazal tell us that what Moshe Rabbeinu was shown is absolutely impossible. What did he see? What did he see when he was on top of that mountain? We're going to see it's absolutely impossible. Either he was shown the future, or he's shown the entire land with one glance. And that's impossible. How far can you possibly see? A couple miles? 10 miles? 11 miles? If you have a clear day right from the top of a mountain, maybe that's what you're able to do. But this entire thing was telling you the pure awesomeness, says the Talmud Das, of Moshe Rabbeinu before he passed away. He was so tolerant and so pure. He was so completely beyond the world. He was able to see things that people can't see. He's able to do things like write those Sifrei Torah that no one was able to do. As well as, he was able to grow and climb to madrigas, to levels that nobody else was able to get to. That is the level of Eved Hashem. The Moshe Rabbeinu was able to be a pure Eved Hashem at the end of his life, which no one else was ever able to do, weren't able to do it. Meaning, on this level, his body achieved a level where it was above the physical, and therefore, he didn't need to walk. He literally was flown from one level to the other. And that's what it means in Maila Achas. It shows you not just the greatness of his strength and his power and what he was able to do. It shows you the strength, the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu, that he was literally not physical at the end of his life. That he didn't need any of this. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, go up the mountain. He just had to take one step and flew up to the top of the mountain itself and found himself up there as if everything was right there in front of him. Okay. Now, Ayelus HaShachar says it could be that it would be miraculous for normal people to climb up the mountain, but he was a little bit different. We see this, that there are people that are born with certain kochos, certain strengths that other people don't have. For example, like anybody who's seen any of these crazy magicians, right? If you've seen any videos or anything like that, but when you're not watching Torah anytime, if you're watching any video that has like those magicians on it, they're so quick. They're so quick. They're unbelievably quick. You could be staring at them, and they're such experts that you don't see what they're doing or how they're getting rid of the cards. They're unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable what they do. They claim that the Maril Diskin had a power that he's able to count things just by taking a glance at them. Like looking at that pile of chairs, he's able to just take a glance and tell you, oh, there's 41 chairs over there. And that was that. He was able to see the amount of leaves on a tree, and he's able to count them just by taking one glance at the tree. They say that the Maril Diskin had that. Listen, there are savants that have the ability to do certain things, and it could be that this was considered something ordinary for Moshe, but for everybody else, it would be considered just totally extraordinary. Maybe he was of a certain level, he was of a certain strength, that everything was different. And the Shach says, the entire pasuk refers to the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu of this level that a person can get to. It's almost like it says, but Ya'al Moshe is voy. Woe, they said. All Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu got up to a level where nobody can get up to. Up until this point, Moshe was a guarantor for Klal Yisrael. That when Klal Yisrael needed something from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe Rabbeinu was always there to say, don't worry about it, I got this for you. No worries whatsoever. Now that he was gone, the Malveh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, was going to have to go directly to the borrowers, Klal Yisrael, they wouldn't be able to pay. And that's what it says, Me'ar Vos. He was the Arev. The guarantor for all of Klal Yisrael, and that's that. Then the Shach says something beautiful. Remember we said that Moshe Rabbeinu got to level. So guys, you all know your Midrashim over here. What level did Moshe Rabbeinu get to, but he could never get up to the next level? What level are we talking? The 49th level, but he never got up to level 50. Says the Shach, he did get up to level 50, and it was on the last day of his life. Moav is the gematria of 49. Mem, Vav, Aleph, Beis is 49 altogether. He could never reach the 50th Shar, which was his true desire. He wanted to get up there so badly. Only after he died did he go to Har Nivo. Nivo is Nun Bo. He had the 50th level by him. He's able to get to that level where he was able to be what's called Atzilus, the connection that he had with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and he became almost as if he wasn't there anymore, connecting with Hashem as if Moshe Rabbeinu himself meant nothing at all. That's why it says the Miloy of Moshe Rabbeinu's name, Mem is Mem Mem. So the Miloy would be a Mem. Shin is Shin Yud Nun. Yud Nun is the Miloy. Hey, Hey Aleph. So there's Aleph, Yud, Nun, Mem. Okay? Those letters spell out Me'ayin. He was from as if to say nothing. And Rosh HaPisgah is the same gematria as La Keser, that he went to the level of Keser plus the four letters, 654 altogether. Says the Shach, that shows you really how great Moshe Rabbeinu was. And that's why he was able to, according to the way that the Talmud Das put it, fly up to that top level. That's why he was able to get up to a level that nobody else was able to get to. It was an awesome level, says the Shach, something that nobody else was able to do. Okay, that's the end of that. What was Moshe Rabbeinu shown? What did he see when he was on top of that mountain? What was he able to see when he was up there and he was shown whatever it was over there? Earlier, Devarim HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised him he wouldn't go to Eretz Yisrael, but he would be able to see the land. Right, that was in Parshas Vaschanan. This is where the promise was fulfilled. Rashi and Devar Yamin says it was an impossible task to see everything. You literally can't see that far, but it was a true miracle, and that's that. But Rashi here says he just wasn't shown that. He was shown the future. He was given visions of Eretz Yisrael as a peaceful state. I would assume that means in the days of Shlomo HaMelech and many of the Shoftim, when things were going really well for them, and there was nothing happening to anybody at all. Then he was shown the Shevet of Dun. That's why it says in the beginning of the pasuk, it says Ad Dun. He went all the way to Dun. What would happen to them in the future itself? They would eventually worship Avodah Zarah. They would do Pesel Micha, as well as Shimshon, who was from Shevet Dun, who would eventually save them. He would save them from the pollution in a very unique way. There's Peis and Gimel as well, the other things that he saw, but that's not for this year. Targumson adds that he also saw what Yiftach did to his enemies in the area of the Gilad. And that's why it says Migilad Ad Dun, from all this area. The Meshech Chachma has one of the best words I've heard in a long time. I called somebody up when I read this. I was like, oh my gosh, this is the greatest thing of all time. The Pasuk says, Ad Dun. There's machlokas in the Gemara. When we say the word ad, does that mean until and including? Or until but not including? Ad v'ad b'chlal? Or ad v'lo ad b'chlal? When we say that he saw ad done, all the way until done, does that include done? Or does that not include done? Says the Mesha Kochma, if you're including done, then yeah, it means that he saw Pesel Micha and he saw Shimshon, he saw all those things that were going on. But if it's ad v'lo ad b'chlal, it's because he didn't want to see Pesel Micha. Who was the Levi who was made into a Kohen for Pesel Micha? Who was the guy that was in charge? I'm sorry? No, well, not him. It was Yonasan ben Gershom ben Menashe. That's mentioned at the end of Shoftim. Yonasan ben Gershom ben Menashe. The Pasuk says Menashe with the Nun a little bit farther up from the rest of the words. Because the truth is, this was Yonasan ben Gershom ben Moshe. It was Moshe's grandson who became the Kohen. He was a Levi, but the Kohen for Pesel Micha. And what he had done was he mamish allowed himself to be this Kohen because he misunderstood one line from Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu had said, if you're poor, then you could do avoda shezara lo, strange work, things that you normally wouldn't do. He thought it meant, if you're poor, you could do avoda zara. So he started worshiping avoda zara. Because he had done that, because he went and did that, Moshe Rabbeinu was not shown Pesel Micha. Why? Because he would have been so upset to see that his grandson was involved with Pesel Micha. So it's ad done. He saw everything that would happen, but not including done, because he didn't want to see what his own grandson would do. Is that a brilliant shot from the Mesha Chachma? Really, really good shot. All right, that's the Mesha Chachma itself. Alein Lishabach says this should give us great chizuk. If Moshe Rabbeinu has seen everything, and he was okay with it, that means that even though things may stink, that means Moshe Rabbeinu saw it and said, it's worth it. Because Moshe Rabbeinu saw everything. He was shown the future, shown what would happen to Klal Yisrael, and he accepted it and didn't daven for it. He didn't daven for it to stop, at least that we see. It means he saw it. He knows. He knows that Temple Mount is taken over by the Arabs that are sitting there with their dome of the rock. He knows that Shechem is taken over to Mars Machpelah and the areas that are around. He knows the issues that we've gone through and accepted and said, this is the best thing for Klal Yisrael. That should give us strength, says Alein Lishabach, to know that Moshe Rabbeinu has seen it, accepted it, and knew this is the best thing for Klal Yisrael. That would be something there. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh says he did see the entire land. Not just the future, but he saw the actual land itself. How did he see it? Says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, you have to use the Or HaGanus. If you remember, Bereishis Bara Elokim es Hashamayim es Haaretz. Va'aretz ha'isah so vavo. Right, the land was filled with null and void. The Choshach al-Bnei So'om. Beruach Elokim, berachav zal p'nei ha'mayim. Okay, you have all that in the first two psukim. Vayom Elokim yihi Or, vayi Or. Okay, when was the sun made in the first 7 days of creation? So it was made on day four. What was the Or that was created on day one?
From the Torah.
I'm sorry?
The light of the Torah.
But the Torah was created 2,000 years before, and I'm not saying you're wrong. But the Torah was 2,000 years before creation, whatever that means. So what's the Or? So Chazal tell us the Or is the Or HaGanus, a hidden light. Something that was special, something that was different, the hidden light. The Gemara tells us in Chagiga that Adam HaRishon was able to see from one end of the world to the other with the Or HaGanus. That the Or HaGanus, this hidden light, was able to show him something that he could not have seen otherwise. Something that was so awesome, he was able to see from one end of the world to the other. If you have the Or HaGanus, it allows you to see everything, no matter where it is, no matter what's going on, you can see it all. Says Or HaChaim HaKadosh, that's what he saw. He was given just that idea. There might have been kfitzat derech that the land folded up beneath him so that he would see everything. But it didn't have to be that way. It was through the Or HaGanus he was able to see things that other people can't see. How does that work? I don't know, this isn't a normal light. It's not a normal light. If a normal light was given to him, again, 12 miles, 11 miles, that's the most that a person can see, he was able to be shown things as if they were brought right there in front of him, as if everything was shown in front of him. That's what the Or HaGanus is able to do. The Baal HaTurim says in Pinchas that he was shown all the caves and the hiding places where the Kenanim hid their treasures, said he would tell Klal Yisrael. My problem with that, he's already up the mountain. And he's dying. When would he have told Klal Yisrael where all those treasures were? I don't get what that Balo term is trying to tell us, and I didn't see anybody who explained it well. That Taros Adar says something, but I didn't like what he said. I don't understand why that would be necessary at all. He never went back down. I'm not so sure. The Torah says, simply put, he saw the beauty of the land. There's a Moshe of Zakenim on that as well. The Torah more says there's more to this than just that. You know why he had to see the land? He wanted to put his good eye on the land. You know what that means? When Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron counted the people, they had to count them. Now, isn't that totally inefficient? Why not send out somebody? Like you'll take one, Ezra, you take another, right? Michael, you grab one, Avi, you grab another, and count it up and bring it back to me, and we'll count it up all together. Moshe and Aaron had everybody pass in front of them, one by one, one by one. So they went, Biskira Achas, they would look at them, counted them, and then they went through. Why would that be necessary? And the answer, the Gemara says, is Tov Ayinu Yavarach. Because a person is Tovayan, he gives a bracha. When he looks at you, when he gives a bracha, can you imagine walking by Moshe Rabbeinu and Moshe Rabbeinu is like, you count as somebody in Klal Yisrael. That's a great bracha from Moshe Rabbeinu that would be there. And the same idea would apply over here. When he looked at all of Eretz Yisrael, he was looking at every single point to put his bracha upon the entire land. This Sforno says the same in Pasuk Daled. He was trying to give the entire bracha. What did Bilam do when he wanted to curse Klal Yisrael? He tried to look at Klal Yisrael. He was going on top of mountains to look down at them to see where they were and see what they were doing. Because in order to curse, you have to see where Klal Yisrael is. So too, in order to give a bracha, you have to see where Klal Yisrael is. That's the idea behind it. It's a brilliant idea. And that's what he was able to do. Tzafnas Paneach. This is the Rugachev Rebbe. The Rugachev Rebbe says this exact same idea. He was Mekadish Bereiah, the entire area, so it would be easier for them to defeat their enemies later on. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was able to look at it, it's as if it was already conquered. He was able to look at it, give his power to it, and therefore Bnei Yisrael could just come in and sweep it all up as if nothing was there. Now, granted, there were issues. The Ai, right, when they fought against the Ai after Yericho because Achan had stolen something, they did lose Yair ben Menashe, or 36 people. There were issues when they came to conquer the land. But for the most part, because of what Moshe Rabbeinu did, he was able to do something to make sure nothing bad would happen. And it could be that he even davened for them. And it's strange. I know we look at it now and we're like, well, what happened in the Makom HaMikdash? The Makom HaMikdash is taken. Almaris Machpelah is not ours. Kever Rachel is not ours. Shechem isn't ours. There's so many parts. The Shomron, the Gaza, the Strip. But that part is not ours. Why is that? It could be that Moshe Rabbeinu's look kept the Kedusha of those areas forever. That even if they would be taken over by other people, nonetheless, the Kedusha remains there. Kedusha, we showed a Kedusha Shaitiv, a Kedusha Lassid Lavo, even though there's a Machlokas of that applied by the first base of Mikdash. The Kedusha, we showed a Kedusha Shaitiv, a Kedusha Lassid Lavo, that stayed there for as long as it possibly could to allow for those areas to become so Kadosh that even nowadays, in theory, if we could bring ourselves to the Makom HaMikdash and we would be Tahor, if we found a Paraduma, we could bring Korbanos. Because our Kedusha, the Kedusha of that area remains there. And if only we would be Tahor, it would be there maybe through the Tov Ayin Hu Yivarach of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu was able to do, and the awesome thing. I think the Meshech Chochma says this as well, Perek Lamed Beis Pasuk Mem Tes. The Alshich brings it as well, that he brought him up to a mountain to see all this place. They all say the exact same idea, that Moshe Rabbeinu was looking at it in order to make something happen over there. And the Chidah as well. The Lev Simcha of Gur, I don't know if anybody knows the Lev Simcha, one of the later Rabbanim of the Gera Chassidim, says the Raya of Moshe Rabbeinu, the Re'iyah of Moshe Rabbeinu into Eretz Yisrael, allowed for the land to have something special. And we all know what this is. You've been to Eretz Yisrael before, right? Avira de Eretz Yisrael Mechakim, the airspace of Eretz Yisrael makes you feel smarter, makes you feel wiser. That happened because Moshe Rabbeinu looked at the land. We don't know how. But the reason why Eretz Yisrael has that specialty to it is because he looked at the land that way. I had a little bit of akasha. If that's true, I don't know why the Midbar wouldn't be the same way. Because Moshe Rabbeinu looked at the Midbar. Why would Mitzrayim not be the same way? But maybe there's a different way of looking at something. Maybe the way he looked at Mitzrayim and over there. I'm sorry? Maybe the Oraganus was necessary in order for that to happen. I don't know. But it seems interesting that would be there. Okay. He looked at Dun. Where is Dun? What does that mean? He looked all the way until Dun. Well, what's the area of Dun? If you look at different maps, you're going to see different areas that belong to Dun. I don't remember which one it is. I think it's the art school. The green Tanakh that has all that map in the back that has all the different Shvatim. Look at the green art school, the older ones. It has Eretz Yisrael is right here. Okay, you have the Kinneret, the Yam HaMelech, right? Right over there. And here's the Mediterranean Sea. Dun is right around here. Right by Tel Aviv, Yafo, right that area, Bnei Brak, they owned that area. And then a little bit farther down, they should have had the entire Gaza Strip. They didn't take over that land along with Yehuda. They didn't take it over, but they got that land over there. That's what the Green Art Scroll used to have, the big Tanakh Art Scroll. If you look at, you know those, the red Nevi'im? You know, they have the English in it. It's written in Ye Old English. What's it called?
Oh, it's the Judaica Press.
Yeah, Judaica Press. Yeah, I think that's exactly it. The Judaica Press. They have the map in the beginning of the pages by Yoshua and Shoftim. If you look there, Dun is all the way up north, past the Kinneret, all the way up north in the northeast area. So what's Pshat? Where's Dun? Why is Dun in two different places? And the answer is, it's both. Because Shevet Dun originally got land right there. Tel Aviv, Yafo, Beit Shemesh, that was all the area of Dun. Okay, but they wanted more land. They did not take over the land of the Pelishtim. For whatever reason, they felt that they couldn't capture that land, they couldn't conquer that land. So instead, they went up northeast, past the borders of Eretz Yisrael, and extended the borders a little bit further to where Gad was, the Shevet of Gad, all the way, the Shevet of Menasheh all the way up, and they took over land that's called the Banias. Has anybody ever been to the Banias? Do you take a hike by the Banias, the start of the Kinneret? Does anybody know what I'm talking about?
Yeah?
Anybody who's been there, you know where the Banias are. It's all the way up northeast, near Syria. That's the area where Dun was. That area was called Leshem or Laish, depending on Divrei Hayamim versus Yoshua. And it's that area where they went to that they took over. And that's where Pesel Micha came into play. It was those people who left this area down here and went up there. They're the ones who stole Pesel Micha on their way and brought it up with them right over there. That's why. So my only question is, I don't know what he means by Ad Dun. He looked all the way until Dun. Where's Ad Dun? Ad Dun up there? Ad Dun down there? Like, which way was he looking at? Now, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky and the Netziv both say that it was an order. Moshe Rabbeinu looked up this way, down. And that's how he was looking at Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, Dun would be right over there because of the first Pasuk. He's saying he saw from the land of the Gilad, Ad Dun, and then he went down that way. That's what it would be. But it seems strange. The Ramban and the Tur both say that Dun was in the northwest of Eretz Yisrael. Unless I'm understanding this Ramban and the Tur wrong, and I don't think I am. I looked through it three times. I'm not sure I'm missing something. But they're saying that Dun was up northwest. Every map that I've ever seen has Leshem or Laish by the Banias, which is right above the Kinneret. But the Ramban must have had another way of looking that Dun not only took over there, they took up over there as well. I just don't know. I have absolutely no idea. The Ramban is also famous for saying that there are three Hora Horrors, and one of them is up there as well. Maybe there's some connection to this. I just don't know. I couldn't find enough over there. Okay. I'm skipping the Meshach Chokhmah for right now. So everybody, if you can turn to page 4. And once again, if anybody needs any sheets, you can email me at rabbizim@gmail.com. David Ezra says that in his opinion, Yoshua began writing from this Pasuk on. This is Perek Lamed Dalet, Pasuk Aleph. There are 12 psukim in Lamed Dalet, and the Torah ends with Pasuk Yud Beis. In his opinion, says Ibn Ezra, Moshe Rabbeinu stopped writing at the end of Perek Lamed Gimel, and from Perek Lamed Dalet and on was all Yoshua. Why? Because there's no way Moshe Rabbeinu could have written this because he didn't climb the mountain yet. He hadn't climbed the mountain. In Pasuk Hey, it says, Vayamas Sham Moshe. Moshe died there. And the Gemara says in Bava Basra Yadalid, how could he write Moshe died there in past tense if he hadn't died yet? Says Ibn Ezra, how could he have written that he climbed the mountain already if he hadn't climbed the mountain already and he didn't come back down? So it must be that he started from Pasuk Aleph, not from Pasuk Hey. You probably heard that Yoshua wrote the last 8 psukim of the Torah, or at least that's a machlokes. According to Ibn Ezra, Yoshua wrote the last 12 psukim in the Torah. Not 8, 12 psukim altogether. And how did this happen? B'darach Nevuah, Yoshua still had Nevuah at the time, and that's what ended up happening over there. The Ibn Ezra totally goes against the Gemara. The Gemara Bava Basra, Yudalim and Alf, says clearly, there's no kash about this, the last 8 psukim were written by Yoshua. And why? Because Vayamas Shem Moshe. That's what's going on. Even there, it's a machlokes, because Rameir says that it was Moshe Rabbeinu that wrote it. Bedema, he wrote it with tears, etc. But it seems very strange. But the Ibn Ezra makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Why would he have written Vayal Moshe, Arvos Moav, Al Har Nevo, if he hadn't gone up there yet. But he's not going to come back down. Yeah. Moshe, okay, yeah. So the Ksav Sofer in Torah Moshe asks this as a question. He says, if Yeshua only wrote from Vayomer Shel Moshe on, then who wrote these first four psukim? Who wrote that he went up to the mountain and did everything over there? He says he didn't understand. He says it's very dochik to assume that he brought the Sefer Torah with him up the mountain, wrote those last four psukim, left it there, somebody went up and got it, and then brought it back down. He says, that's what it seems like, right? And he wrote the last four psukim on top of the mountain. He says, it's very dochik to say that. So, I don't understand. So who wrote these four psukim? And he ends with a tzarech ian. I have no idea why he doesn't quote the Ibn Ezra. No idea. The Ibn Ezra, he knew very well the Ksav Sofer. I have no clue if he did it on purpose, missed out on that Ibn Ezra on purpose, but he ends with the tzarech ian. The Rabbeinu Bechaya argues with this Ibn Ezra, but I'll tell you, this is not going to help for the Gemara, and it's not going to help the Ksav Sofer. Rabbeinu Bechaya says, the whole Gemara is off. The whole Gemara is off. He says, it seems Ibn Ezra wrote this because he couldn't understand how Moshe Rabbeinu could have written about his own death in past tense. But the truth is, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote every word of the Torah from Bereishis until Yisrael. All Mipi Agvura from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mouth. That's the opinion of Rav Meir. That's what Rav Meir says in blah, blah, blah. So although he does say these apes who were written bedema with tears, but nonetheless, he said this. Moshe was writing things, he says, that were going to happen in the future in past tense. Like in Azinu, says the following. Vayara Shem, Hashem saw, past tense, Vayinatz, and he became despised, Mikas Banavu Benosav, from the anger that his sons and his daughters did. That's going to be in the future. Hashem is going to get angry over what they will do. But it's written in past tense. Hashem saw it. How could you write it in past tense? Says Rabbi Bechaya. Because even if it hadn't happened, that's the way Hashem wanted the Torah to be written. So to over here, if Hashem wants the Torah to be written, Vayal Moshe, or Vayama Shem Moshe, then he wrote it that way. It could be written in past tense if Hashem wants it that way. Why would that be a problem? So he says he has no problem with saying it whatsoever. He says it's throughout the Torah and Nevi'im. The things that are in the future are still written in past tense, and I have no issue with it whatsoever. It seems to be perfectly fine. An amazing piece. But I have no idea why the Rabbeinu Bechaya ignores Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, Yeshua wrote it. And even Rabbi Meir, who he quotes, who says the entire Torah was written by Moshe. But even Rabbi Meir acknowledges this problem. And he looks at it and he says, then why was it written bedema? Why was it written bedema? It was written with tears. It sounds like something's wrong with the last day Pesukim. And the Rabbeinu Bechaya totally ignores it. There's nothing wrong. It's the exact same thing as the others. Then why was it written bedema? Again, and the Ibn Ezra is 100% right. If you're going to say it starts from Yalmoshe Moshe, why wouldn't it start by Yalmoshe Me'arvos Moav? From right over here, from right over, from these psukim. I don't have a good answer for it. I really have no idea. If the Ksav Sofer went with a Tzarech Ian and refused to answer the question, there's no way that I'm going to come up with an answer that's really going to be satisfactory. Absolutely no idea whatsoever. But I can tell you, there's got to be something to this. The Ksav Sofer's suggested answer may sound ridiculous, but it's got to be that's what happened. Moshe Rabbeinu brought a version of the Torah with him up the mountain. He wrote these four psukim of what he saw. And then afterward left the Sefer Torah there and went to his burial place to die. And at some point, somebody went up and found the Sefer Torah. It's got to be that way. I don't see how anything else makes any sense. Unless you say that Moshe Rabbeinu Mamish wrote it, from, or Yoshua wrote it from Pasuk Aleph and on, and then the Gemara, when the Gemara says 8 psukim, it's Lav Davka 8. It's really 12 psukim. I have no idea how else to be able to explain it. Again, you want to go with Rabbeinu Bechaya? Then you're basically throwing out the Gemara. Because even Rav Meir doesn't seem to hold that way. You want to go with the Ibn Ezra? The Ibn Ezra just says Moshe Rabbeinu wrote it, but then you're ignoring the Gemara completely. To be able to go with both of them, you have to go with the suggestion of the Ksav Sofer, and even though he rejects it, I don't know of a better answer. I have absolutely no idea what to do. You should know. The Pardes Yosef says there is a minhag for Chaim Pelagi and the Knesset Gedolah in Orach Chaim Tav Reish Samach Tes to call the Chasson Torah from this pasuk. Not from Me'ona Elokei Kedem, but from Pasuk Aleph. But he's not sure where the source of the minhag is. But there are ramazim to it. For example, you give the person Aliyah for the word Vayal Moshe. That's where the Aliyah starts from. It's a very, very, very strange thing. We don't do this. I don't know anybody who does that, that does Chasson Torah from that Pasuk, from Pasuk Aleph and on. It seems like everybody does it from before, but at least everybody should know that there is a minig that way. And I think there's something really special about this. I didn't do enough research. I'd love to hear if anybody has any other answers as to why Pasuk Aleph is different from Pasuk Hey, that Vayamas Shem Moshe, the Gemara says, had to be written by Yoshua, but Vayal, or at least Bidema, and Vayal was perfectly fine. I'd love to hear another answer. I don't know of any, and I couldn't find any others, but this seems to be a very, very strange thing. So again, to go over everything, what we did was, we said, number one, this shows the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. He was able to climb up the mountain and do everything that he was able to do, either physically, spiritually, or just awesome-wise that he got to the 50th level. Then we went into what he saw, why he had to see it, why he had to see it in order to give that bracha to the entire land. And finally, what the idea is behind this pasuk of Vayal Shem Moshe, who wrote it, when was it written, and how it ended up going through. Shkak, everybody, have a great Yom Tif and a great Shabbos.
Okay, what about the 13 Sefer Torahs? The same problem.